Welcome to Mir News Now, the podcast for Henry Ford College's student newspaper, The Mir News. I'm Catherine Warden, Editor-in-Chief. I'm excited to bring you a three-part series we like to call Behind the Scenes. In each segment, we will go behind the scenes of several local attractions in the Metro Detroit area. For part one, we are going to be joined by Kiana Freeman, creative editor of The Mir News, who spoke with Melanie Bear Schwartz, the director of sales at the Library Street Collective in Detroit. She will be followed by Mir News reporter Zainab Al-Tamimi, who spoke with Elizabeth Barrett Sullivan, curator of exhibits at the Arab American National Museum here in Dearborn, Michigan. Let's begin with Kiana, who visited the Library Street Collective, a modern gallery located in the Belt, an alley that was turned into a gathering space and a series of storefronts in downtown Detroit. One of those storefronts is what looks like a broken hole in the brick wall that serves as a window into the gallery that is the Library Street Collective.
The history of the Library Street Collective, and what is its goal? What are they going?
So I think Library Street Collective started about 10 years ago. The partners are very interested in fostering relationships and building the careers of emerging artists and supporting them. So I think that has been the mission from the beginning, has definitely remained true throughout. We've definitely expanded throughout the years, and it's been amazing to watch the growth of the gallery and the program, especially with our public projects that we've been able to participate in and put on for the city. So it's definitely a big operation that has a big focus on fostering these relationships and supporting emerging artists.
Yeah. Please share your background and how you became involved with the gallery.
So I graduated from University of Michigan. I'm originally from Miami, but I studied fine art and art history there. Then when I graduated, I got my master's in New York at Sotheby's Institute of Art and Contemporary Art. And then after that, I worked in galleries in New York and auction houses and all of that. I actually became the director of a gallery on the Upper East Side. And New York is definitely a different art world than it is here. I was feeling a little burnt out, looking for a new opportunity, not necessarily in Detroit, but I met the partners and really saw their vision and felt their passion for emerging artists and wanted to be a part of it. So the rest was history. And I've been here for 3 years now.
Okay, how are you liking it between Michigan and Miami?
It's been great. Definitely not into the winters, but summer's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
What inspired you to go into the art gallery?
I think for me particularly, I did study fine art, so I did have my own practice, but I wasn't necessarily interested in building my own practice as like a career for myself. I'll always have it in my back pocket, so I really wanted to be able to sort of bridge that gap between business and art. So for me to be able to understand what the artists are doing in their studio and also relate that to collectors, museums, curators, etc. is a really, I think, unique perspective to have. So that's sort of what brought me to my position today. Yeah.
Please share the process of selecting Jamia. Okay. Richmond
Edwards.
For this exhibition.
So Jamia is originally from Detroit, but she moved around. She was living in the South, she was living in Washington, D.C. area, and during COVID she moved home. So we have been in touch with her and admired her work for a long time, and again, it's all about these relationships. So when she was making work that was about Detroit, I mean, I think it was a great opportunity to exhibit that and really foster that sort of sense of community and invite them all out for the opening. Her son played. He's a musician and his band came down from New York and they played and their whole family was here, and it was just a really beautiful evening. The energy was amazing. So, I mean, it's a really organic process to select any type of artists. But yeah, that's sort of how the show came to be. Yeah.
Please share what you, please share what you can about the background of Jamia and her art.
So Jamia is a historian. She is a painter. She is a Black Indigenous American female. So I think that's a really important part of her identity and her work. She's developed her work throughout the years. She's been very interested in these motifs. So you'll see sort of some similarities throughout the bodies of work that she's been creating for years. And I think it's really interesting, especially this body of work has not only allowed her to explore the sense of home and asserting herself back in a city where she was, you know, where it was her home for so long, and I think it's also an interesting opportunity for her to use some of these motifs and sort of expand upon it. For example, fashion and textiles are really important to her. I think in this painting over here, it's the first time she's really been able to take that. Of course, you know, these are mixed media, but to have this sort of mass of these tentacles, you know, coming off the canvas with all these different types of fabrics is really an interesting step that she's taken in her career. We have her first landscape painting over here as well. So it's really amazing to watch her grow and develop over time.
How long did it take to plan this exhibition?
A very long time. A few months. I mean, we generally program out our space for like next 2 years approximately. It does take artists a very long time to plan exhibitions and sort of see that vision and what they want to show to the people of Detroit and the audience in general. Of course, now with the digital world, it's very accessible. We always have 3D tours on our website for people that are not in Detroit who also enjoy the exhibitions. This one in particular has a sister exhibition in New York. So it took a little bit of extra planning between that gallery and, you know, figuring out which pieces were gonna go where. But it definitely takes months and months to plan this type of show.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your favorite piece in this exhibition?
Oh, that's such a hard question. They're all so different. I think I like Naga, this piece right here, just because it's so, it feels experimental for her, and I love that she's able to continue expanding her practice and her use of this media in such a new and interesting way, although she has been using it for so long, it just feels refreshing. And she, you know, works on and studies the motif of the serpent, so I think it's really prevalent in his work. It just feels like something new, which I mean, all of it is new work that was made for the show. I just think that this one's particularly exciting with that dimensionality coming off the canvas and sort of into the viewer space is really exciting.
So my final question, what are your plans for the next exhibition?
Next exhibition is actually very exciting. MacArthur Binion, who actually has his foundation, the Modern Ancient Brown Foundation here in Detroit, he's from Detroit, has not had a solo show here since 1975. And we will host his first solo show since 1975. They're gonna be self-portraits that he's been working on since 2016. So definitely like a very long, very conceptual, but he's a really important figure within Detroit. And the art world in general. He's very well known and very respected, and we're really excited for his sort of homecoming exhibition as well.
Yeah. Can't wait to come see you.
Yeah, definitely come check it out. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so very much.
Yeah, of course. My pleasure. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Kiana. Now we turn to Zainab Al-Tamimi, who visited the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn, which is the first museum in Michigan to be dedicated to the history and culture of Arab Americans.
All right, well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this with me. I just have a few questions, so we can get started. My first question is, would you please share your full name, your background, and how you became involved with the Arabic American National Museum?
Yeah, so my full name is Elizabeth Barrett Sullivan, and I am the curator of exhibits here at the museum. And I started here in 2006 as an intern, and kind of worked my way through the curatorial department. I was a curatorial specialist for a little while, and I've been in my current role since 2009.
Oh, wow. So would you also please share a brief history of the Arab American National Museum and how it came to be?
Yeah, so we are I forget if they're calling us a project or a program. They switched it up recently, of Access, which is a social services organization that started in the south end of Dearborn in 1971. And they were looking at like this holistic view of what the Arab American community needed in order to survive and thrive. And so they started with the important bits like food and shelter and all of those things. And eventually in the 80s, branched out into this cultural arts department. And our museum really stems from that department, which was active for many years, collecting stories from the community, collecting artifacts. There were in the original Access, well, not original, but one of the early Access buildings, they had built little display cases in like their main conference room. So that was like the museum space for a long time. It was like six different display cases. I wanted to say the late 90s, Access leadership started seriously looking at how to form an Arab American National Museum, a national Arab, we didn't have the name quite right yet, but started, exploring what it took to build a museum, and started connecting with other Arab communities throughout the U.S., and then, kind of blossomed from there. And we officially opened May 5th, 2005. Have become AAM accredited and a Smithsonian affiliate since then. And expanding, still collecting, still working. Yeah.
It's been there for a while because I was born in 2005. So.
yes. We have entered like a new era sort of the institution. When I started, it was brand new, only a year old, and now to have seen it change and grow over the last 17 years is really
I noticed that too. There was like new exhibits because I went there when I was in sixth grade, and now that I went recently, it's changed a little bit. There's like new stuff. But so why do you think it is important to have a museum dedicated to Arabic American history / art?
Yeah, so I mean, there are a lot of things that have changed over the last 17 years since we opened. I think at the time in the late 90s, there was very much an emphasis on teaching other people, like not just the Arab American community, about Arabs, because it's like it's still a ethnic group that is like marginalized and misunderstood. There's lots of misinformation out there, and I think we've seen that part of society has continued. So I feel like it's like just as important now to have a museum dedicated to the Arab American story, because there's still this misinformation out there, because the community is changing all the time, and we want to act as a place that is both a community space for the Arab American community and also an educational space for everyone, because there has been a lot of improvements in like ethnic studies departments at university levels over the last 17 years, much more Arab studies courses being offered at universities these days than they were. But it was, it's still such a new field and under-researched, and we are very proud to have like played a part in preserving some of those histories and being able to support researchers and scholars in their work. at the same time as, you know, like we host weddings in our annex and birthday, you know, like we are available to the Arab American community locally and nationally in a myriad of different ways.
Right. So what have been some challenges of the museum during the pandemic?
We were closed for a long time. We closed March 13th of 2020 and only reopened, I think we actually reopened February 11th of this year. It was supposed to be earlier, and then a snowstorm like came through and like, yeah, delayed our plans by a week. So it was early February that we reopened. So we haven't even been reopened a whole year yet, but you know, we had to completely reconfigure how we worked, just like everyone else did at the time. And we still had to produce, you know, we still had to engage with our community and work with school groups where, you know, who would have come in to our doors now couldn't. So working with them to still provide, you know, the lessons and the content and things for the classroom in a completely different environment. You know, everything moved digitally. We started offering virtual programs. Now we're into the hybrid sort of things.
Okay.
So it was very rewarding to be able to do a lot of digital work because we reached a much wider audience in terms of location and kind of in number, in some ways, number, you know, different new audiences. But at the same time, it was, you know, really tough on staff to be able to manage those things, completely change all of our skill sets. And, you know, to feel like we were still making a difference and still impacting the community and being a resource for people. It was just a completely different way of like knowing what success looked like. We've had to rechange everything as we were going along. But I think we've developed some, we learned a lot. And I think we have developed some sort of processes and like work that we will continue to do that we wouldn't have started if it hadn't been for needing to be fully digital.
Exactly. It was a learning experience and you guys got something out of it. So it was overall kind of beneficial. Yeah. So please share what the current exhibits in the museum are and how the works were selected.
Yeah. So we have one main temporary exhibit space, which is where the Cultivate and Grow exhibit is. And that grew out of our artists in residence program that we started. Our first resident was in 2016, but we got a lot of, we got a good chunk of funding in 2019 for our 2020-2021 season. And that continued into 22 as well. And so that exhibit, Cultivate and Grow, is a look at these past 2 years of our artists who we've had in residence. And they are visual artists and performing artists and writers and all types of art that you can think of. Our program is open to that. And so part of this funding was that we were going to create an exhibition highlighting this work that we've been doing collectively. So we had like a basis for, you know, we could only pull from our artists that we've worked with specifically from the residency program. But we had done all this work to select their programs, and they worked on different projects, but they all had this like cohesive theme within them of like growing as artists. And like, even though their projects are all very different, the point of that exhibit is to show how they can be in conversation with each other. And, you know, through our work in supporting them, providing space, making Dearborn kind of a central hub for these artists, there are so many great connections to be made. And yeah, we're just, we, selecting work for an exhibit is, you know, just always one of my favorite parts of building an exhibition. And we had such great projects to choose from these artists that, you know, it was easy and it was fun. And it was great to see how, like, the pieces that we commissioned from this artist called Genzir so similarly reflected the work that Sahad Khatib was doing with her portraits, and she did a workshop and things like that. And they both were reflecting not only on like their own identity and work, but also on like present day, like COVID and dealing with society in general and how it's changed. So that one was very specific. We knew we wanted to do this exhibition focused on this one project of artists in residence. We also have expanded because the program got so much funding and we were able to commission works as well as host these artists. It's kind of trickled into the rest of the museum as well. So there's a large sculpture now in our dome atrium space that was part of that and is like technically part of this exhibition. There's the Zahra Al-Majdi's work on the second floor called Recrafted Histories. Like it's its own separate installation, but it's also part of this larger exhibition because she was an artist in residence. She's a local artist. Her work is part of that larger exhibition, but also its own little thing. So those are temporary things. The sculpture will probably stay up for several years because it's so big. And so those are our temporary spaces. But then of course we have our core exhibition spaces, Coming to America, Living in America, and Making an Impact, which don't change as much within them. Their themes are always the same, but we do rotate out stories and artifacts where we can. But those are like core themes that will always be there as part of the museum.
Yeah. Well, would you please share like a little details about the artists that you were talking about, like their personal, like, you know, how they came up to be sort of thing?
Yeah. So we actually did some really great interviews with almost everyone who came through as an artist in residence, and they kind of all go into their own raison d'etre for why they became artists. I will say that Yasmin Diaz was our artist in residence in March of 2020, and she was someone who I really wanted to host at the museum and host her exhibit as well. So that was an instance where the exhibit and the residency kind of happened at the same time. So she was here to install her exhibition that predates the Cultivate and Grow one, but she does have work in Cultivate and Grow. So Yasmin is a Yemeni American artist. She grew up in Chicago. She lives in California now. I think she was a graphic designer or something. Like she went to school for something else and then found art as like one of her, you know, passions. And she's been working steadily for a number of years now and has really expanded and gotten some solo shows and other installations throughout the country. So far, most of her work has been focused a lot on like her own personal family history. The exhibit we did with her was mostly focused on like girlhood and like coming of age and nostalgia for those younger days. A lot of reflection, which was an interesting topic to have happen at the same time that, you know, we were all going into this very new normal. So looking back on days that were even further from where we are now, was an interesting experience.
That sounds great. But you said she goes to solo shows. That's really cool. Like, does she travel for that? Like,
yes. So, if an artist is offered a solo show at an institution, it really depends on where it is. But we had her; it was all her work in that main gallery for the whole duration that we were closed. But then we actually got to have people in it for a couple of months at the beginning of our reopening. But yeah, she came and. When we actually opened, she was already here for her residency, but she came back to do programs when we actually got to reopen in 2022. And she was offered an installation at U of M that she was in town for. And yeah, if artists are offered a solo show, sometimes there are programs around it, sometimes not. So. It really depends, but I think most artists like to go visit their exhibition. Yeah,
of course. That is really cool.
Yeah.
So what would you recommend for first-time visitors to the Arab American National Museum?
That is an excellent question. I mean, I always recommend our temporary exhibits are kind of, they're ever changing, so it's hard to say that I recommend that every time, but I think at least they're going to be something different than what the core exhibition is about. And right now we've been heavily art focused, but sometimes we do get more culture and history focused in our temporary exhibits. But I think our programs, like our public programs that we do, those are always, a good representation of what we do. If you're looking for like one artifact to see, there is, I don't want to give it away. There's some interesting things in Making an Impact and the Making an Impact Gallery that people would be surprised about. So I definitely recommend going in there, especially,
making an
young impact. Kids.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where, the Making an Impact Gallery is where we get to like celebrate like Arab Americans who've become famous or a little bit famous or have made some sort of contribution in their field. And I think people are always surprised at who they find in there.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I went last week, I kind of went in through the back and I walked into this event. And I think, yes, it was a mistake. I was supposed to go in the front, but they said they were like holding this event. And it's not usually at the Arab American Museum, but it was pretty cool to see that you guys actually hold events there. And like, I think it was the producer. A producer was there and he like teaches different dances, and I thought that was pretty cool. So yeah
we have, we're trying to get back into it since being reopened, but we do have like a facilities rental sort of aspect to us. Like I said, we host weddings and birthdays and those kinds of things. To be a community space, we have our annex space next door, which is like really multi-purpose. We can host film screenings, and we're doing a conference at the end of this week that will be in that space. So yeah, I think it's been important for us to be able to provide physical space as well as the content that we share.
I thought that was like really good. I love that, it was good that I went in because I actually never knew that you guys hold things like that. And now I know. It's really cool. So what events and exhibits are being planned for this winter?
We are doing a Christmas family party on December 10th. I have to check my calendar because I always forget what's happening. Yeah, there's like a holiday winter family party December 10th. We have an artist in resident, Andrea Asif, who is a playwright, and I think it's definitely like this week actually is when there's one performance happening. I'll have to get back to you if there's more than that in our event calendar. But we are sort of like wrapping up our winter season now, so it'll be next year when we like announce the fuller program catalog.
Oh, okay, so next year is when you guys would announce the catalog. Okay, got it. Yeah. Next year. So okay, got it. Thank you. So what changes has the museum had to make since the start of the pandemic?
Well, a lot. I mean, a lot. we've had physical changes within the building. Lots of staff changes. I think it helped us sort of prioritize and look at the areas that we want to focus on more. So we have more people in our programming department now because we're doing such great public programs that, you know, to be able to continue doing those requires a lot of support. We have made construction changes to our lower level. We got new sound system and things like that in our auditorium, which is in the lower level. So there's some cosmetic changes and some sort of internal structure changes. But I think the like something important is how we think about how we deliver our content and being able to be this hybrid sort of space now. We're pushing more of our digital as well as our in-person, maintaining those in-person relationships, I guess.
Oh yeah, of course. So what are the museum hours and how has the pandemic affected those hours?
We are open only 3 days a week. We used to be open 5 days. We are open Thursday through Saturday from noon to six. Mm-hmm. Wait, no, that's not right. Sorry. I think it's Thursday through Sunday. Saturday. Thursday through Saturday. And it's 11 to 6, I think
it's 11 to 6. Okay.
Yeah. We used to be open Wednesday through Sunday, but that's not sustainable hours for us right now. We're looking at expanding on what we're currently offering for the nearish future, but I'm not sure how that's gonna turn out. So right now we're just 3 days a week.
Okay. So what are some of the permanent exhibits at the museum and are there any plans to change any of them?
Yes, we're trying not to say permanent anymore because it implies that they never change, but they do. So we call them our core exhibitions. So that's Coming to America, Living in America and Making an Impact, and also our courtyard space. And then new as of 2019 was our lower level gallery dedicated to art from our collection. So we haven't made a lot of significant changes to those spaces since, except with the exception of the lower level, to the upper second floor and first floor core exhibition spaces since we opened. We've done little things here and there. We change artifacts or add stories. We, in 2015 or 2016, added 10 additional people to the Making an Impact gallery that hadn't been there before. We didn't take anybody out. We just added 10 new people. We, in our Coming to America gallery, the timeline currently ends around 2003, 2005, when the museum was opened, and we haven't been able to get we haven't been able to get stories into that space that reflect the community of newcomers that have happened since 2005. So that is something that we I really wanted to do. We wanted to do it pre-pandemic, but weren't able to execute it. So there's, you know, it takes a lot to add anything to a museum. And it's made more difficult by having pandemic things to deal with. But we do try to make up for that by, you know, having programs that better reflect like the newer communities. Our temporary exhibitions, we've done, you know, work that dealt with those newcomers, people who have come since 2005, and those kinds of things.
So what, if any, long-term plans does the museum have?
So many long-term plans. We have a strategic plan that takes us 5 to 10 years in the future. Basically, nothing, you know, strategic plans aren't necessarily like giving you like a specific roadmap of things that you're like definitely going to do, but like it's kind of like a visioning board for the future. Like, we would like to be expanding our collections and archives. We would like to be expanding our national reach, those kinds of things. And like basically still here in 10 years is a goal.
Yes. National reach. Okay. So what are some of the programs for youth and that the museum supports? So
yeah, we have a long-standing Sora Arts Academy program that predates the museum, and we took it over. But basically, it's photography lessons for middle school, high school age kids. And yeah, we have, in the past, we had, I think, 3 semesters or 3 sessions a year. I'm not sure exactly how many we do now, but definitely during the summer, it's like a week or 2 week long intensive where kind of camp sort of environment. But during the school year, it's like an after school program kind of thing. So there's that one. We did, we got funding from General Motors last year or the year before to do writing fellows with high schoolers. So high schoolers who wanted to be writers and learn more about writing got to be part of that program. And that at the end of that program, the final projects were all compiled into a book and published, which we now have and make available. And that program is going to continue next year as well. We do Arabic English story time for like the real young kids. We do those family parties. We try to provide a myriad of programs for different age levels, besides what we already do with like classrooms and, you know, those lesson sort of curriculum things.
Okay. So last question, what impact has the Arab American National Museum had on the Dearborn community?
I don't know that we've done a study of that yet. I think we are still evaluating, I think, how we've had an impact, but I know that we have become somewhat of an anchor institution in Dearborn. People know about us. People know we have some influence in the area. We hope that we've become a, you know, community-based space that people think of us as someplace that, you know, is doing things that are relevant to them, you know, holding programs that they find useful. Our parent organization Access still provides social services to the, you know, residents in the area. So we're always a piece of that larger impact in the area. We hope that we've become a good hub for American knowledge and culture and the whole thing.
And you guys use social media to like get the word around about these programs and everything. Do you use Facebook and Instagram?
Yeah, we're mainly on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Got it.
We keep joking that we should be on TikTok like the youth. Oh, but... yeah.
I TikTok. Actually, yeah, it's become really popular. It's become the new. I don't have Twitter, so you could reach a lot of people from TikTok. It goes viral, so definitely.
We just we need more entertaining people on staff that can do a viral TikTok or something.
Honestly, just keep trying until you make it. I mean, yeah, you can go viral on TikTok, seriously. But yeah, that's all I have. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this with me. This is all great. So thank you again.
No problem. Thank you so much.
That was Zainab Al-Tamimi speaking with Elizabeth Barrett Sullivan, curator of exhibits at the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn, Michigan. This concludes this episode of the MIR News Now. Check out the next installment of the MIR News Now podcast we call Behind the Scenes, where we visit the Henry Ford Museum of American Innovation and the Greenfield Village. This is Catherine Warden. Thank you for listening.